Morning, everyone. We'll kick off now. Good morning. Welcome to TechEd. I'm Paul from HP, one of the Server Blade evangelists. I'll be down here at our stand. HP's sponsoring of the event, so if you've been to labs, you'll see that the labs are being powered by HP Blade system and 3-pass storage. And today, in this session, we're going to talk about some of the best practices and optimizing techniques and technology we've got for Windows Server 2012. So So we're going to talk about our new Generation 8 servers and how we've optimized them for 2012. These Generation 8 servers are all part of our converged infrastructure, our converged system. So our virtual system for standing up virtualized environments quickly, cloud system for standing up a private cloud quickly in your environment, and also app systems for like a Microsoft SQL database consolidation appliance. So with the release of Windows Server 2012, HP is going to be supporting Windows Server 2012 on all of our current Generation 8 servers and all of the previous Generation 7 servers. So that includes the ML and DL rack tower-based servers, the Hyperscale SL servers, as well as our popular BL Blade servers. So if you're going down the path now, know that we have already started posting drivers to HP.com to support these new release of Windows Server, as well as you can go to the URLs to get more information on the certified models. So when we released our Generation 8 servers, one of the key things we were trying to do was improve the whole life cycle of your experience with the servers. It wasn't just about Intel's released a new CPU, let's put it in, put some more memory in, and ship it out. It was about improving the whole experience. So with our Generation 8 servers, when we launched it, we announced we'd spent $300 million R&D-ing this model of server. That was significantly more than we'd ever spent. We filed 900 patents, over 150 customer-inspired innovations. So taking feedback from all of you on what we should do better to make it easier to manage and use the product and more reliable. And so when we released Gen 8, we released the integrated lifecycle automation. Built into every Generation 8 server as part of the ILO is this intelligent lifecycle automation technology. And so there's a couple of key pieces to that. There's the intelligent provisioning. So when you boot that server up, it'll boot into an intelligent provisioning environment if you haven't deployed an OS to it. And built into that intelligent provisioning environment is all of the drivers for your deployment of the OS. And that includes Windows Server 2012. So I've got one down on our stand. And in there, built in, you can already select the Windows Server 2012 driver set and configuration to deploy it. As well as all of the other tools that you need for lifecycle management of the hardware. So let's say you want to put more drives in the server. You've got the tools there to expand the hardware RAID without needing to go and download extra CDs. And then we've built in an active health system into that ILO engine that monitors over 1,600 hardware parameters of the server continuously. So even if the server's plugged in but turned off, it's still monitoring the health of that server and will log any issues. And so then it can then take those issues and log the call with HP if there was something wrong that needs HP to address it without needing user intervention, which is significant improvement. So you can reduce a lot of downtime by proactively fixing it. So let's say there's an ECC memory error on a DIMM. Before that causes an issue, it can log a call to get that DIMM replaced. And it also has built into their firmware update tools, built into the ILO processor. So I know people deploy these servers in all different places. And I do see some familiar faces in the room, which is good. So give an example. I've got a customer that has oil rigs. They've got servers on oil rigs. They don't want to copy ISO files to do a firmware update of a server on a remote location. So this has all the environment of the smart update built into it, so you can just copy the individual updates to it and firmware update the whole CD, whole server, sorry. Then it can also have a couple of other pieces in there that I'll show you. So we've done a lot more than just that, though. So with the optimizing for the new generations of OSs, we've now released a whole new range of SSD drives. If you put SSDs in a generation server or older servers, the PCI bus to those drives was a bottleneck for the drives. You could not use all the speed of the drives. So with the new Generation 8 servers, they've actually got a new PCI bus to the drives, new smart array controllers, so that we can get all the performance out of the newer solid-state drives. Now, if you go down to the HP stand, you'll see we've got some disk shelves that pull straight out of the rack, like a whole drawer that comes out. So you can actually run up to 228 drives off single smart array controllers now. So if you need a large amount of storage for things like Enterprise Vault, archiving emails, you can do it through a disk shelves like that. Something else that's interesting that's changed with the Generation 8 servers is there's no longer fixed embedded adapters. So if you have specific needs, we have different adapters so we can cater for those needs. Or as technologies get released midway through a hardware cycle, we can then adapt to that, put the newer adapter in, and not have to release a whole new server or change that. So to cater for things like SRIOV that you might hear about for Hyper-V, we can put new adapters in to cater for that. Location services and energy optimization. Interesting, on the side of all of our DL servers now, if you have a look on our stand, we can show you there's two little markers, silver markers. They actually can read a location strip on a rack now. So monitoring software can actually figure out where that server is in your data center. And then reading the temperature off the ILO processor, you can build a heat map automatically out of your data center. So you can address the thermal differences in your data center without needing to engage expensive consultative processes just to figure out the hot and cool spots. And our IO accelerators. So now with the new release of the Generation 8 servers with the new PCI buses, we've now got a new generation of IO accelerator. So an IO accelerator is an even faster than SSD block device built straight onto the PCI bus. Being very popular in VDI environments for storing master images to avoid boot storms, antivirus storms, deployment time issues of desktops, IO accelerator has been very popular in there and also in the database area. They're an OEM'd card. We OEM them from Fusion.io, who are here. So if you want to know more about them, either come and talk to HP or the Fusion.io guys. We're happy to talk about them. Something else that changed with Generation 8 servers, which really everyone was telling us we had to do. You turn on a server, and CPU does an initialization, the memory does initializations, and there's nothing on the screen. You turn it on, everyone who's watched a server boot knows exactly what I'm talking about. You sit there going, oh no, what's wrong? Is something wrong? Something wrong? What's going on? You put more memory in it, it takes longer, and you're not sure what's going on. HP built into the ILO engine a video output to occur while that occurs, so you can actually check what's going on. You can see what phases it's going through on boot. So I'll show you, when you first power it on, you'll actually get the screens. You'll get a little indicator telling you some of the components that are built in. Now, this is a new Generation 8 server. This is taken off the one I've got on the stand, the big 660 blade. It's got the intelligent provisioning built in. Now, if you've already deployed an OS, you can just hit F10, or if it doesn't have one, it'll boot into this environment. And you can either configure and install the hardware for an OS, as well as repurpose, and it'll actually go through and reset the BIOS settings specific to the OS that you're deploying to make sure it meets all the best practices. Or you can perform maintenance. This is where you get all the tools I was talking about out of the box for maintenance, and they're all built in, so if the server's remote, it's not waiting on copying and downloading tools to utilize those tools. And it covers the whole life cycle from deployment through to erasing the server. If you rent a server off someone or you're returning at end of lease, you can erase it and it'll scrub the disk, scrub all the BIOS settings, scrub it back. Another key part of our launch with Generation 8 servers, and we continue to be going down launches, is how we optimize for storage. Because we've all seen how CPUs are growing more and more and more cores, more and more memory, but storage has been an issue for customers, especially as we put more and more virtual machines on every one of our servers. So when we look at how we address that, we're trying to address it in the server and in the storage array, and including cost and performance. So what we're trying to do to close the gap is eliminate many of the things as we can to make it more cost effective and simpler to manage. So one of the key things is Virtual Connect, which we've launched, has been very popular over the years. We've sold 6 million ports of Virtual Connect. It accounts for something like 17% of all 10 gig ports out there. And it's just an interconnect in a chassis. With Virtual Connect, you can now directly attach a 3-bus storage array straight onto the blade chassis, eliminating the requirement for SAN switches. Now, the other thing is because of how many host ports these arrays have, if you've got inter-site replication, you can still do it without needing the SAN switches because you can plug the array into CWDMs or use the IP replication ports. So you can really deploy it without needing SAN switches and save all the money of SAN switch costs and management. Ongoing support of those switches, completely gone. So the first question everyone asks when they hear about this is, yeah, but I've got more than one chassis. How many can I really, like, does it scale? Does it grow? Of course it does. So a new 3-power arrays, the V800s, have up to 96 host ports. So that means you could plug in 48 blade chassis or, you know, 25,000 general purpose virtual machines behind one 3-power array without actually needing any SAN infrastructure. That's when it starts to become really appealing. I don't know too many people in country who are going to run into 48 chassis in one site as a limiting factor for this. So obviously that's a key function. It comes in, anyone who's got Virtual Connect Flex Fabric and 3-power can utilize this today now. It's just a firmware update. And what we've done is just enabled login services, name services into those Virtual Connect modules. And you can still have SAN zoning. So if you have zones to different operating systems or customers, that can still be implemented on the module through the virtual SAN implementations. So improving storage performance is obviously very critical in the data center. As drive sizes get quicker, I haven't seen disks start to spin any quicker either. And so we need to be more efficient in how we use those disks. And so we're introducing some capability into every Gen 8 as another firmware update called Smart Caching to even further improve the performance of the SANs. So typically what we see is people either buying, let's say, SSDs for small capacity things like maybe high frequency trading, and then general spinning disks get used for all the, you know, larger data spaces. So what we're trying to do with smart caching is cache for read caching in the server data blocks that you're reading a lot. So what we're doing is we're enabling in the smart array controller and in the firmware and drivers of it the capability to know which blocks in a storage array in the 3-power arrays are hot, and then it will copy those blocks into the Smart Array Controller SSD drives or I/O accelerator, providing even lower latency than cache in the storage for the servers. Now, the good thing is first thing I'll hear is, oh, but that's too expensive to implement. Maybe I should put the disk in the array. The thing is you can implement it on certain servers that do some functions and not on all. So let's say you've got two database servers and you want to improve the read times of those database tables. You can put an I/O accelerator within the server or SSDs and use this smart caching technology to improve the performance of reads for the databases, but other things on the SAN you mightn't want to do that for. So you can be selective in how you implement it. So depending on how much data on the array you actually want to cache depends on how much performance gains you're going to get. But by putting that cache, the read cache, locally in the server, we go down to read cache times and not measured in milliseconds, but measured in microseconds, providing significant reduction in read times. So obviously, the more that we cache, the bigger accelerator or SSD you put locally, the bigger the performance gain. But it's a cost offset too. So I'm sure everyone's been to many tracks and heard some things today about, or this week, about ODX. Yeah? Please tell me some of you have. Good, good. So we're enabling ODX on, firstly, our three-power arrays with the roadmap to be done on the others. So the first one I'm going to have a look at is the unmap functions. So typically with a storage array, when you delete data in the operating system, it's not returned to the storage array. So if someone dumps a whole bunch of their files on the array, you need to manually go and do an unmap through a manual tools to reclaim that space once the data's been deleted. So what we're doing with the three-part and ODX is I'll run through a demo, and firstly we're going to have a look at copying data from a non-ODX to see the performance to the three-par, and then we're going to swap it over and do an ODX to ODX. Oh, sorry. So first we're going to do the unmap. So here we can see there's 41% used. It's 42 gig on there. And so what we'll do is we'll delete that data. And once we've deleted it, we'll then watch what happens. So right now there's a couple of 8 gig files. So that's two of them. So we're going to delete those two 8 gig files. This is being done on a three-par backend array. So once we delete those files, right, you can see the operating system said delete the files, done. Then if we go to the inform console of our three-par array, we can see the orange line. I know it's faint, but we can see the orange line spiking up. And it's now going to go around and free all those that space that we've deleted and return it back to the disk array, so it can be reused and not just sit there as wasted capacity. So now if we keep refreshing using the ODX commands, we can then see it'll free that space up back into the three-par pool of disks. Now this was on a, even if you used thin provisioning, to reclaim that space, you needed to run manual commands to clear it up. So we can see the red lines down the bottom is front-end IOPS. So we can see there's nothing being transferred between the disk array and the host. But we can see the orange line is throughput and the blue line is back-end IOPS. So we can see the array is doing all the work in the background. And now if we go back to the command line, we can see, I know it's faint from the back, I can replay this later up close for people. There's 25 gig used, 26%. And so it's freed all that space up. So with the ODX, you've also got the offline data transfer. So with the offline data transfer, they're supported within the array. So if you're copying data from one host to another host, but it's all on the same array, or if it's on the same server and you're copying or moving files within different LUNs within the array, then ODX can take all that workload of reading the data off the SAN to the server and then writing it back to the array and do it all on the array level. So things for like migrating virtual machines between LUNs or doing your live migrations or just general data copy. So what we'll do is I'll run through and I'll play the offline data transfer. Sorry. There we go. Okay, so with the offline data transfer, So with the offline data transfer, what we're going to do is we're going to copy some data. We're going to use the same data sets for both examples. So we're going to copy some data files from one volume to another non-ODX volume first, and then kick off ODX ones. So with here, I've got this file, pretty big file. We're going to copy it, and we're just going to do a standard paste on the same host. So if we now paste it, we'll see that start to copy. And so this is the non-ODX copy. Right, it's about 8 gig file. Now if we go along and do another copy and pick a volume that's ODX supported. So this is ODX to ODX on the bottom one. We can see the speed, it just flies. So all that offloading, it's now being done at the array, and the host is not reading and writing the file data. So that'll go through pretty quick. And then what we'll do, while the other non-ODX copies are going, let's do a virtual machine migration, data store migration in Hyper-V. We'll pick a virtual machine. Then we're going to go through and pick a different LAN on the 3PAR that, again, supports ODX. Right, so we'll go in and pick the folder that we want to move it to. Now here is the inform console looking at it while it's doing that live migration. Again, the red line is front-end IOPS. So that was from a previous copy, but here we can see right now there is nothing going through the front-end. It's all back-end IOPS. I know it's a faint blue line up here. All of it's been done in the background, and so the host isn't involved in all that copy. Now, if we go back to that previous non-ODX copy, we can see it's just about to finish, right? So there we go. It's finishing now, and it took about 10 times longer to go through. So we can see that ODX provides some great, you know, optimization for data copies. So I mentioned before our converged systems. So our 3PAR is being used in lots of our converged systems. And our blades are made up in almost all of our converged systems. So what I just want to run through now is talk about some of the cloud system capability that improves deployment times even further and simplifies infrastructure and service deployment within an environment. So with cloud system, when we talk to people, they tell us that one of their biggest challenges they're trying to address in the data center is how long it takes to deploy services within the data center. Right? From, you know, the time that they make a decision to deploy, procure, size, architect solutions, implement it, it just takes too long. It's a month's process, not a week's process. And then CIOs might say, well, why should I build it in-house if I can push it off-site to someone else's infrastructure? And then there comes management and security of that, questions that come into play. So with cloud system, what we're trying to do is enable customers to build that speed and agility in-house at a level where they can actually control that private cloud infrastructure. So with cloud system, what we do is we've got on top of our Insight Control Management software, cloud system. And cloud system gives the ability for you to have things that you do regularly published into a self-service portal so that the cloud system can actually go off and automate the deployment of that infrastructure. So if we look at it, it does the whole piece of the deployment from configuring the adapters in Virtual Connect to push network and I/O profiles down to the server, to creating LUNs on a storage array to present to those adapters on the server automatically on request. and then it will go set up the hardware and deploy an operating system. Saves heaps of time, right? The thing is businesses are thinking services, not just the underlying operating system. So with the cloud service automation piece of software that's part of it, we can actually automate the deployment of the application into that operating system. And then with SiteScope, we can monitor the quality of the performance of the hardware infrastructure as well as the software. So what we can do with cloud systems, then we can grow or shrink those services depending on how heavily used they are. So with cloud system, what we do is we create baseline templates for physical and virtual resources. Because we know when we talk to customers, yeah, they want to be 100% virtualized, right? I'm sure everyone here, that's like, you know, utopia goal is you want to be 100% virtualized, but you know that you're not now. And there's some things that you can't virtualize, some things that maybe because of the size of them end up becoming physical servers. And so what we can do is we can use through the portal the deployment of virtual and physical resources. Using our like standard definitions, once they're deployed, we can then compliance check them to see if they, you know, align with policies. So how that really benefits then further is you can then ensure that virtual machines match the same policy as the physically deployed resources. And then you can actually perform corrective action if they don't. And then that can then be performance monitored and alerted through SiteScope. And services can be, when I say published to a self-service catalog, they can be booked for time periods. So think about you've got to start. The project starts in 2 months. Why have it build the stuff now when it's not going to be used? So you can schedule when it gets built. But then schedule when it gets reclaimed. So I know of some marketing companies that do publication, you know, ramp up web services for a, you know, a marketing campaign, then they want them teared down at the end. So it can actually tear down the service at the end of it and then get those freed resources and put them back into the resource pool for provisioning for other projects. So how this is uniquely different on the market is that we've got some capability that through the templates you can think about services and not just OS instances of physical or virtual. Because we know that realistically, you're building services for your end users. So we can build a cloud map and a template, right? And how this is beneficial is you can then basically design your resources. So let's say you're doing a web service. I deal with a media company, and they push out lots of databases with front-end servers and some search engine servers. And they do this quite a bit. And so what they do is they've got a template with about 3 front-end services, some database servers, and search engine virtual server. So every time they need it, they can go into the self-service portal and select the service, and it'll configure the whole service, including all of the networks, the shared LANs for the physical and the virtual, and create that as a whole service, and not just then individually select all the pieces. And then one of the other unique bits then is it can grow the service. So then you can say, I want it to start with, let's say, the web front-end services, 3 servers, but grow up to 10. And then as the performance or the usage goes up, you can scale out those services and add more web servers that meet the template automatically. Now, we actually, with these IO designer here where you can create the template and publish it to the portal. We've got 2 people here today down at our stand who are actually doing live demos of this. So if you go down there and see June or Jimmy, hope that's easy enough to remember. June or Jimmy have a notebook they're connecting to our demo center. They're doing these live demos so you can see how you can create your own maps, how they might relate to your infrastructure to push out. And so with cloud maps, that then takes... That's us. We will actually create some cloud maps that you can utilize. So on our hp.com, we publish pre-made, pre-sized, pre-canned cloud maps of typical infrastructure that people are deploying. And so You can then download those, see how they're designed, sized with the storage sizes, networking sizes. We'll then put in the workflow scripts to do all the deployment of that. And with the references and the sizes, you can then see how that relates to your environment. So how this becomes really useful, I got a customer who's going through application deployment cycles at the moment, ready to ramp up. They're dealing with an external application provider. And they ask IT, I want a couple of database servers, a couple of these servers, a couple of application servers, so we can test the new cycle. So IT go off and they configure the two physical database servers, configure the virtual servers for the IT provider. Then they say, that's great, we did our application testing. They make some revisions. And then they say, can you re-provision all that infrastructure again? Because we want to test the next version. So they got sick of these cycles because it just took too much of their time. So they used these cloud maps and built their own templates, though, that is of that infrastructure map that is being deployed. And so every time the application provider wants a copy of that infrastructure to test it, well, they just let the application provider go into the self-service portal, request the service themselves, and then Cloud System does all the provisioning. And all they do is hit approve every time it's requested, just so the provider can't go and provision, you know, 1,000 instances of it just because they can. So with Cloud Maps, what we've done is on HP.com, they're really easy. What we can do is you can go on the HP.com website. We have a whole list of the ones that we've got. And on there, you can go on and you can download them. You can then download them, and then they just import like an XML file straight into the Cloud System Designer. And then once they're in there, you can then select your images and some of your policies that you've already got that will apply to them. And then once you've done that, they're in the self-service portal, ready just to hit go and have them configured and deployed. Greatly simplifying how that infrastructure gets deployed in your environment. And as I said, it's across physical and virtual instances. It's agnostic of that. Now, we actually make cloud maps for many different software packages that you deploy, middleware. We've got a whole bunch of Microsoft-made cloud maps. They're published on the website, so Exchange, SQL, IIS-based cloud maps. So any of those projects that you're looking at, you can then get those cloud maps, see how they're sized and designed and architected, so that you can then see the correlation to your environment and deploy them in a quick in manner without having to go through that architecture design piece that's very time-consuming yourself. So we've got a diverse range of cloud maps that plug straight into Cloud System. But it's not just about the deployment. It's also about the complete life cycle. So as you go through patching, upgrading, through to retire, the cloud map can help that whole piece. So through the cloud map, we might talk about patching. So with a patching, as you go through an update cycle, right, how many times have you gone through upgrades where the patch might get applied to some instances and maybe not all instances? So the policy checker can go through and do a compliance check to ensure that every one of the systems got the patch applied to it. And so you can be aware where they're not applied to avoid, you know, the instances where you get an outage because one server in the whole map or the service missed the patch. So cloud maps obviously then significantly help in delivering a faster return on investment through delivering speed and agility of using templates that other people are already using. So you know they've been proven, designed, and tested by other people, by HP, and by application providers that are in there, and that they're already designed to meet design best practices. So you can try and miss or reduce the amount of deployment issues you might experience in an environment. And obviously then free up staff. So, you know, one of the big things I hear when we talk to IT management is they want to flip that 70-30 ratio, although some tell me it's 80-20. the amount of time spent fighting fires versus the amount of times that you're actually delivering innovation to the business. So using this to help automate and orchestrate the deployment of services can significantly contribute to that, you know, flipping around of the time ratios. So with HP Cloud Maps, you know, the big differentiating factor between how Cloud Maps and Cloud System help you versus whether you wanted to, say, use some virtualization tools is obviously that it can cater for the physical and not just the virtual instances of operating systems and the use of the Cloud Maps. But you get all that flexibility as well, that you're not tied down to specific hypervisor versions or uses. So if you've got mixed deployments, I mean, if we did a survey and said how many people use, you know, different hypervisors, you'd find that there's, you know, a mix. But people have a direction they want to go. And so with this, you can cater for mixed environments, where with other tools, a lot will only cater for certain types of hypervisors, certain, you know, management tools there. So obviously then by using that, you're going to save heaps of time in your data center by leveraging other people's experience in this space that's already been done. Now, those Cloud Maps get published into just hp.com/go/cloudmaps. So you can go there and have a look at them, download them. You don't actually need to be licensed to use it to go and view them. So you can actually go in there and see the ones we've got. And as I say, the guys downstairs that are doing demos of it, so you can actually see how it would work, how easy it is to create a template of services and publish it to the portal so you can request it and use it. But, you know, who's already using this is, you know, questions we get asked all the time because everyone wants a reference. So here locally in Australia, I'm sure everyone's heard of Fortescue Metals Group. Yeah, I hope so. So they're, you know, one of the third biggest mining companies in Australia. Rapid expansion. You know, and as a business is going through such rapid expansion, you know, IT need to keep pace. But be cost effective, because at the end of the day, they're a mining company, not an IT company. And so Fortescue Metals Group have got a published reference case study where you can go and read and see the benefits that they're receiving by using these cloud system and cloud maps in their environment. And what they do is they're running HP Blade system with 3-pass storage with cloud system to do the automation of deployment and orchestration. They're also using HP to manage that infrastructure though. So we've got a group that are called the Critical Watch Center. They're a local facility based down in Newcastle that actually do the day-to-day management of that whole, you know, cloud system environment. So then all IT need to do is use the self-service portal to go in, request services, cancel services, and use that portal to request services while the Critical Watch Center helps them do the day-to-day, you know, management of that infrastructure. Something you might have read there is they're also HP pods. So when you're trying to ramp up infrastructure really quick, data centers take a long time to come online. And so typically a lot of people just use colos. So something they actually use is the HP pod. I'll just bring up a diagram and show you what one is. So it's basically a data center like a container. And so they use them so they could put a data center out where the data center is close to the people using it and needing it. But you can ramp it up really quick because it's a pre-made data center. The one I'm showing here is what they have. We've got two different types. One is an EcoPod that can use free air to cool it, and one like this where it can use a water chiller. Obviously, out in dust storms and wind storms, you can't put a free-to-air system in there and it needs a water-chilled system. Now, this system goes down to 1.25 PUE, so very efficient. From a cooling perspective, but because of the design, you know, depending on the model, like this will go up to 29 kilowatts per rack of density. So you can actually fill 4 racks full of blade high-density servers or scale-out servers. So many times I go to data centers and they've only got, you know, can only half fill a rack because of power requirements. I'm sure everyone's experienced that. It's frustrating because then you have to buy another rack to put servers in just because you can't fill the density. So with a pod, we've actually addressed that. We get customers. I got to know a customer locally who uses this. They just put it in a warehouse that they've got so they could quickly ramp on a data center. And pretty much looks like that from the inside. So it is just a hot aisle, a cold aisle, server racks with a chilled water supply to cool it. And so that using that enabled them to quickly ramp on a data center, servers, storage. And basically, HP can deliver it and then they can start using services. So nice, neat way of addressing some problems that they had. So anyone who's using QR codes on their phones, if you want to get that case study, you can just scan that barcode now. If you're not, then that's fine. And you can get that case study. Now, as I say, we've got we've got the cloud system on display here at TechEd. So you can come down to our stand. We can show you the cloud maps, show you the provisioning in there and how you can create that. We've also got some of our blades on display. We've got our 460. Most people hopefully should be familiar with that because that's a best-selling blade on the market. But we've also got a recently launched blade server on the market called the 660. So it's a BL660 Generation 8. So Intel have recently launched some new CPUs that cater for 4 processor servers. And so we've got the 660 on display, which is a 4-processor blade server. For people familiar with our chassis, that's a single-width, full-height blade that can go up to 32 memory DIMMs, 32-gig DIMMs. That's a pretty big profile of memory in a blade. So we've got the 460 that does 0.5 terabyte and the 660 that does a full terabyte of memory in the one blade. Also with 40 gig of I.O., per standard in that blade server. The 660 also comes, which we've also just launched, in a DL560, so a 2RU rack mount server, again with the 4 Intel 4600 CPUs. We don't have one of those on show here, but we do have the 660. We've also got a 3-pass storage array on display. So anyone who goes past the HP stand, you will see the large 3-pass array with the yellow on the front. So we've got one of those on display here that we can show, as well as a whole bunch of our products from our personal systems group. Now, I need to make a couple things aware. So there's been a session change. So anyone that was going to Inside the New Hyper-V, it's been cancelled. Not sure, but I had to say that. And also we've got Take to the Cloud with Windows 2012. So for people who are doing tweeting, if you tweet, "I want to ride in the hash, give the reason," the winning one will win a ride in the helicopter. Pretty good competition. There's also some eval forms for all of your sessions where you can win mice, as well as we've got a prize free gift. So at the back of the room, we're going to be giving away. Well, not here, but we'll give away these passes. And so people who come to the HP stand, there's free gifts being given out for people who present this, up to 250 of the free gifts. And so if you want to have a look at some of the material that we've run through today, that's available on the TechEd site. I'm sure you've probably seen that already. I'd like to thank everyone for coming here today. And obviously, I'll be available, I'll be around, so people who want to come and talk to myself or anyone else, come to the HP stand. Thank you very much for coming.